This is the Behavioral Observations Podcast with Matt Sicoria, session number 43.
Welcome to the Behavioral Observations Podcast, stimulating talk for today's behavior analysts. Now, here's your host, Matt Sicoria.
Hey everyone, happy new year. Welcome to session 43 of the Behavioral Observations Podcast. I am so excited to share this episode with you today because I can't think of a better way to start off 2018 than with this conversation with Dr. Megan Miller about how to do better in the new year. What do we mean by doing better? Well, she gets into that in pretty good detail, so I won't spoil it here. But I do want to just mention that doing better doesn't necessarily mean that this is a guilt trip. In other words, we're not trying to say, you're doing it wrong and you need to do it better. No. What we do talk about is the idea of a focus on continuous professional development. And we get into why that's important regardless of what stage of practice you're in. In other words, whether you have just passed the exam and are starting your first job, or if you're an old timer like me and been doing this for a while, there are important lessons to be learned about the things that we talk about today, regardless of where you are on your practice timeline. So I hope you get a lot of information out of this and inspiration to do better in 2018. And we'll give you all the resources to make that happen as well. So I also want to let you know that we recorded this over the Christmas vacation, and there were a lot of, let's say, personal interruptions throughout the podcast, and I put those in the air quotes that you obviously cannot see. What I mean by that is that we arranged this interview to go out on New Year's Day, as it's going out on New Year's Day. Many of you will hear it then. In doing so, we scheduled this interview during her son Taylor's nap. Now, I have three kids, and I remember back in the day, trying to get things done, whether it's finishing writing a report, or even some sort of task like unloading and loading the dishwasher, things along those lines. You know, these magical moments of time that you can try to get things done. And so I certainly can empathize in terms of where Megan is with regard to that. Well, it didn't happen, and he woke up about 10 minutes into our interview, and Megan was the epitome of a multitasker as she tended to him, got him a bottle, kind of walked him around, all the while answering my questions about doing better in 2018. So in an ideal world, I probably would have re-recorded the interview at another time, but we had the timing factor that I mentioned earlier playing against us. And at the same time, I know that there's plenty of young parents or parents with young children listening to this show. And I think it's something that we all can relate to as moms and dads. So, and not to be outdone, my dog Scout scampered downstairs to the basement where I record this podcast. And at some point during the interview, he heard something upstairs that he could have only interpreted as an existential threat to humanity and proceeded to bark his head off. And so I'm going to be doing my best trying to edit these things out. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to get all of it. And I think that'll be okay because I think the information that Megan provides is going to render those minor interruptions quite irrelevant. So I, again, hope you get a lot out of this. Before we get to the show, I do want to let you know that this episode is supported by Chartlytics. Chartlytics is a single comprehensive system for behavior reduction and academic improvement through precision teaching. And they offer a two-day intensive workshop on PT and the standard acceleration chart across locations throughout the United States. And if you've been following along the last few episodes, I had a chance to participate in one of those events out in Las Vegas, and it was just unbelievable. So if you get a chance to up your game in terms of measurement, or at least challenge your assumptions on measurement, I would go to chartlytics.com to learn more. If you want to attend one of these two-day workshops, you can go to chartlytics.com/events. And if you're looking for a lower barrier of entry into this world of precision teaching and standard acceleration charting, go to chartlytics.com/Matt. And what they've done is they have provided a starter package for listeners of the Behavioral Observations podcast, and that includes a one-credit webinar for Type 2 continuing education, a free ebook, and some cool videos on how people are using the standard acceleration chart and the principles of precision teaching in their practice. So again, that would be chartlytics.com/Matt. And this podcast is also sponsored by Operant Coffee. Operantcoffee.com is where you'll find more information about them. And their mission is to help you serve amazing coffee while promoting environmentally safe and sustainable business practices. All of their blends are roasted with Fair Trade certified coffee beans and made in partnership with the Philly Fair Trade Roasters. And they are committed to saving the world with sustainable behavioral business practices. And during the production of roasting and blending the coffee, they compost, recycle, and limit waste. They're also committed to supporting fair trade practices to ensure that farmers that produce the coffee continue to work in safe and reinforcing environments. So if this is something you're interested in getting on board with, and I highly suggest that you do because I've had Operant Coffee before, the Burris Breakfast Blend, to be specific, it's fantastic. And so you can go to operantcoffee.com. And if you want to get a little bit of discount, you can enter the promo code BEHAVIORCOFFEE in all capital letters. So I think that will do it for preamble. And yeah, I hope you enjoy this fun conversation. So without any further ado, let's look forward to doing better in 2018. Dr. Megan Miller, thanks for coming back to the Behavioral Observations podcast for round number three. You now join the likes of Mark Dixon, Greg Hanley, and Pat Fryman. So you're breaking the glass ceiling as it relates to multiple podcast appearances. At least it relates to as it relates to my show. So congratulations on that. Thanks for coming on again.
And that's super exciting. I'm so special.
That's right. Super, super duper special. So you reached out to me and wanted to come on the show. You were saying that you had something in mind for 2018, a movement, if you will, which I'll let you describe. And the idea behind it, if I'm not mistaken, was to focus on specific topics for skill development for all practitioners to take into consideration across the year. So I figured we'd talk about what those things are, but also talk about what led you to create this. I think this is what you have here is pretty cool, and I'm looking forward to hearing more about it. So why don't you start us off by telling us a little bit about what this movement is, what you're calling it, and what was the motivation behind creating it?
Sure. And thanks again, Matt, for agreeing to do the interview. I'm sure it's not often that people ask to be interviewed, so thank you.
You'd be surprised, but go ahead.
So basically, dating back to when I first started presenting as a behavior analyst, one of the presentations that I do is called Advancements in Autism Intervention. And in that, I kind of give a history of my career in behavior analysis. And the theme I noticed was how I was constantly trying to learn how to do better as a behavior analyst and serve the clients better. Whatever I learned in grad school is never sufficient, and I have to constantly seek out new information. And it may be because I encounter a specific client where what I've learned doesn't apply, or just in general, I go to a conference and I see something new that I've never seen before. And I've noticed a couple of things through my different interactions with behavior analysts and with Facebook. One, from interactions with different behavior analysts, is I tend to try to surround myself with other like-minded behavior analysts who themselves are doing better in whatever it is that they're that they work on. And I feel very fortunate to have been able to network and make those connections with people. But then I've also seen, because I'm pretty active on Facebook, that there seems to be a lot of people who in their early careers or even later are kind of going through the same sort of transition piece where they're going from grad school where they learned certain basic things about behavior analysis, but now they're out in the workforce and they're trying to apply what they learned and it's not quite fitting. So they'll post questions on Facebook. There's definitely a motivation to do better, but I don't think that access to the right resources and supports are there. So I'm hoping with this movement, by picking a different theme each month, we can get a community together of people who all want to do better and recognize that as behavior analysts, we constantly have to stay on top of the, you know, best things that are available for our interventions and not just get stuck in a rut doing the same thing over and over and over. So that was kind of what promoted it. And I also, for navigation, I'm going to be making a lot of webinars this year anyway. So I wanted to try to just have a way to sort of pull everything together and create a community where we could all be teaching each other and improving the work that we're doing as behavior analysts.
You know, I feel like that's a fantastic idea and it's very necessary, I think, in our field as it is, and I guess just about any field. But, you know, certainly I think at the time we're recording this very recently, a lot of people got their test results back, you know, so we have a lot of newly minted BCBAs. And we also have some folks who are, you may have missed by that much and are, you know, kind of gearing up for, you know, round number two, in some cases more than that. But for those practitioners that are out there, yeah, I'm sure it is, who are just getting started, it's probably overwhelming just to kind of finish with all that stuff. And it's probably a huge relief in that, you know, kind of post-reinforcement pause, if you will. And then the idea that you got to keep going is probably pretty daunting, but it's also, I guess the other side of that coin is that, like you say, it is very easy to get into a rut. And one of the things I see people struggle with a lot is, you know, once you get into that kind of mid-career stage and you start, you know, having kids and buying houses and doing all those kind of grown-up things, it is very, very tempting to just kind of get overwhelmed. Not tempting, but it's easy to get overwhelmed by all those kind of life responsibilities and do what you need to do in perhaps a perfunctory way to maintain your certification and things like that, but not go after, you know, huge skill building activities and things like that. So I think what you're doing is awesome here. So let's dig into it a little bit more. So how are you kind of structuring this? And I know you've got it, like I said, broken down to different months and things like that. So how do you want to tackle this?
So first, I think I could explain sort of the general format, and then maybe we could go through the themes for each month and what a little summary about what we'll be working on in each of those months. Does that sound
good? Perfect.
Okay. So obviously the first step is getting people involved in the movement. So that is being done through social media, posting on Facebook, and I'm trying out Instagram finally. I'm still not really sure I understand how to use it, but we'll see if that's, if I make use of that. And then I've also created a Slack channel or Slack group and channels within that. And I've used Slack a few different times for projects that, like Ryan O'Donnell and his group with NextGen have done it for their conferences. And then I know Rick Kubina and Amy Evans with Chartlytics are using it with their trainings. And it's just a really nice way to get people who are all working on a similar project together and have conversations about that project. So I figured that would be an easier way to have conversations about these different themes because you can just click on a channel. So if you're wanting to talk about the theme for January, you can just click on that channel and then people can have conversations with each other about that. And then whatever resources I'm sharing for that month, I'll share there as well. So I'm using Slack, and then also for Facebook, I'll be posting on our Navigation Behavioral Consulting Facebook page all of the different resources and things as well. So there will be various ways that people can contact the information and have conversations, but obviously the more interactive people are and like contributing and sharing their knowledge and also their experience with whatever theme we're talking about, the more beneficial it will be for everyone and the more we will be able to do better.
All right. So step one for listeners would be, if they're interested in doing this, is to go to Facebook and go to the Navigation Behavioral Consulting page and follow that, like and follow that,
yep.
Right?
Okay. Yep.
And I'll have those links in the show notes, folks. So So that would be step one, and that's probably from what I'm if I'm understanding you correctly, that's where it would be the kind of main clearinghouse of information. So if there's an invitation to a Slack group or something like that, that should all be there.
Yes, okay. Correct. Yep, and I'll be posting the link to Slack on there as well. So, and then the next step will be for each month, I will have resources that are being shared, and it's a week by week thing. So week one will always be some type of video, and then people will have a conversation about that video and maybe share their own videos. Week two will be a webinar that I've created surrounding the topic. Week three will be a blog post where I'll be writing about something relating to that topic, usually connecting people with different articles and books and resources related to the topic. And then week four will be community participation, where people are sharing examples of how they've applied what we're discussing in that month to the work that they're doing.
Cool. So let's start the year off. We're recording this on December 28th. So January is literally days away. So how are we starting off 2018?
Okay. So we're going to start off 2018 with probably one of the best ways to do better, which is to make sure you're always thinking like a behavior analyst. So with that, that kind of theme, what I've noticed is with a lot of the work that we're doing lately, people are being trained more in procedures and protocols, and they're not necessarily being trained on how to observe a situation and analyze it and apply the science of behavior analysis. So for that theme, what we'll be doing is looking at how to make sure you are constantly applying the science of behavior analysis and really analyzing things. And we'll be looking at some resources such as Dr. Bailey's book, How to Think Like a Behavior Analyst, as well as the webinar. I haven't decided yet. I have two different ones that, and I might just put them both out for this topic, but I'll be looking at, helping people. I've created like a task analysis basically for how to think like a behavior analyst and make sure you're analyzing things all the time. So I'll be doing that.
Alrighty, we're going to take a quick break here while Megan attends to Taylor. Apparently he had taken his diaper off, and so she is making sure that situation doesn't go from bad to worse. So I thought I'd take a quick break and tell you a little bit about an upcoming conference. It's the Georgia Autism Providers Conference. So what is that? It is a conference that's designed with the practitioner and parent in mind, and it offers a wealth of session and workshop topics that are both extremely practical and highly informative. The overall mission of the conference is to equip professionals and caregivers with the skills needed to provide evidence-based treatment and intervention in home, school, clinic, and community settings. The conference content is organized into two participant tracks, a novice and an advanced track. Within each track, content strands assist participants in organizing and customizing their conference experience. So it is going to be held on June 27th, and it's going to go through June 30th. The venue is Jekyll Island in Georgia. And man, I was just looking at the website, and right now as I'm recording this, it's about 6 degrees here in New Hampshire. So looking at this beach scene is just very, very, very tempting to go to. So I understand that there is a early bird discount, so if you register before the end of January, you might be able to save a few bucks. So I would go to the website, which is GeorgiaAutismProvidersConference.com, to get more information. And again, register early and save. There's a value advanced registration that expires on January 31st. So again, that's GeorgiaAutismProvidersConference.com. I will have the links to this in the show notes. And so check it out and see if it suits your needs. Now let's get back to our interview with Megan. All right, so we're back now. We had to pause for some parenting duties. And so we were talking about Dr. Bailey's book, Think Like a Behavior Analyst, and other sorts of things relative to the January theme of Think Better. So was there anything else about that you wanted to talk about before we moved on to February?
I think that's it. This one I'm the most excited about learning, helping people really analyze whether or not they're thinking like a behavior analyst as often as they should be. Because I know, like we said, this getting stuck in a rut situation, this is where that really comes into play. And I have to reflect on it quite often, whether or not I'm actually thinking like a behavior analyst or just blindly implementing things that I've been taught.
So. I see. Yeah. It's like you see a situation. It's like, oh, okay, fit part A into slot B, and as opposed to taking a step back and looking at it from, you know, what the critical behavioral principles are that could be going on.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. So I know it's kind of a little bit longer discussion, but like right now I'm working on toilet training Taylor. He'll be 2 in February. And obviously we all know like our basic toilet training protocol, but I'm following that with modifying things as we go based on his performance. And just kind of that sort of idea of like, we don't just implement a protocol and like blindly follow. We should constantly be analyzing where things are going and making sure we're revising as needed. So I'm really excited to dive into January and start it off strong.
I see. And as a side, best of luck with toilet training.
Thank you. We've had many successes so far, so we'll hopefully continue.
Outstanding. All right. So February, the theme of February is assess skills better. So let's dig into that a little bit. What do you mean by that?
Okay. So assess skills better. One of the things that I've noticed a lot being asked multiple times per day on Facebook pages is, what assessment should I use for, you know, a 10-year-old, or what assessment should I use for a child who is done with the VB map? And it's just kind of been getting a little frustrating, because it's pretty much impossible for any one of us to say, oh, you should use X assessment, because we have to know a lot more about the learner and actually see them to decide which assessments would be appropriate. And I often encounter behavior analysts who say like, well, I just use the VB map, or I just use the ABLES, or whatever assessment it is that they use, as opposed to learning about different assessments and individualizing based on the child. And then, of course, if something's not actually in one of the assessments that we're using, a lot of people are kind of at a loss for what to do. So I'm not entirely sure if that's just not being trained in a lot of graduate programs, or if people just kind of get rusty because they go into a flow with whatever assessments they're using. But the whole concept of just walking into an environment, seeing what a child is doing, determining what strengths and weaknesses there are, and writing a plan without referencing some type of book that you've bought that has a bunch of skills listed, doesn't seem to be happening very much anymore. So this is another one that I'm really excited about in terms of helping people sort of, you know, look at where they're going with assessment process for skills, and make sure that they're individualizing based on the learner, and that they're making use of all of the different materials and resources available, but also looking at how to assess a skill without even using whatever materials you may typically use. So for this one, the first week, I'll have a video of like how to assess a skill without using a book. Then the webinar will be on assessment, like a bunch of different assessments that exist and how to sort of piece those together based on learner profiles, as well as individualized assessment process. And then week 3 will be a blog. I've created a document where I list out all of the different materials we use right now for assessment. So my blog is going to be about that. But then I'm hoping for the community participation, people will have examples of the ones that they're using and the ways that they're using it, because everybody does that differently. And I think we could all learn really well from each other how to make it more efficient, for one. But, you know, what are some tips and tricks for best using the different assessments that are out there? And then, of course, week 4 will be the community participation for sharing how to individualize assessments. And one thing I forgot to mention, Matt, that this just made me think of. So for me and my background, I mostly work with children with autism, but I'm hoping for the Do Better movement that we will have people participating from all sorts of different populations. So whether it's autism, schools, OBM, zoos, whatever, wherever people are working. And obviously a lot of the things that I'll be sharing will be from my background and what I do, but I'm hoping people can be sharing based on their background and the work they do. So if there was an OBM person, maybe they'll have some examples to share of how they assess skills in a workplace and things like that.
That sounds cool. And very, very much needed. So March is a topic that I hear come up all the time. It's train parents better. Yes. We did a podcast about that a few episodes ago. Oh, that's my dog. Sorry.
That's okay.
So guys, we're just to point out to the listeners, we're also recording this during the holiday vacation. So the there's all sorts of things going on in both our households here. So anyway. So we did an episode on that with Brandon Franklin, and that was one of the more popular episodes as well. And it's certainly an issue that comes up over and over again. So what is the Do Better Movement's take on train parents better?
Yes. Yeah, so this is a webinar that the webinar that goes with this month is one that I've had set aside for a long time to make. And it's something we already train our providers on, but there's very little training and guidance provided within graduate programs, especially on how to train people in general, but especially how to train and collaborate with parents. So this for this month, what we'll be doing is focusing on what are some steps that you should have in place for parent training and sort of some of the guidelines and rules and things to consider with looking at working with parents. One of the things that I see happen quite a bit is that people aren't realistic about the plans that they try to have parents or teachers or anybody really that's with a child 24 hours a day do. And I think Brandon touched on that a bit in the podcast that you guys had. So we'll be talking about that a little bit, how to work with the individuals you're trying to train, whether it's parents or others. And do things that are feasible for them, because if it's not feasible, you shouldn't be trying to bother doing it anyway.
Right.
No change is going to happen. And then just some resources that we've developed. We have like a parent choice document that we use to help parents choose what interventions they want to do. And I went to a talk by Kent Corso, a workshop a few years ago at ABAI on motivational interviewing. That actually comes from the clinical psych background, but he talked about making it behavioral, and there's some really great pieces of information there for how to work with parents and get them kind of motivated and ready for action and all of that kind of stuff. So we'll go through that. The weeks for this one, the first week, I'm going to probably be interviewing at least one parent, but maybe a couple of others, and kind of getting their take on their interactions with behavior analysts, because I've definitely met a few parents where they've had not so great experiences. So just having them kind of share, you know, their story and how we're impacting them when we don't do better with how we train them. And then for week two, it'll be a webinar. It's going to be a very comprehensive webinar on parent training that goes through, like I was saying, sort of, you know, antecedent, like how do you lay it out so that parents are getting training to begin with, the in the moment, what types of things should you be doing as part of your parent training, and then some of the other resources, like making sure you're using motivational interviewing and behavioral skills training and those kinds of things. For week three, we're going to have a blog with discussion on some of the different parent training resources. So like there's the Ruby package that was put out by researchers from Ohio State. And then there's some different parent training books that people have written. So I'm going to kind of put together a summary of those and how those might be helpful. I may incorporate a little bit of research, but I may not. It'll just kind of depend on how I feel like people are needing to be guided, I guess.
You know, you might want to think about, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, for the last week, it'll again be that community participation where people can talk about what they've done with parent training and successes that they've had.
It'd be interesting to see if you could incorporate any ACT stuff in terms of, you know, having parents clarify their values and relate their committed action steps towards,
yep.
you know, those values, despite the presence of all sorts of things, you know.
Yeah.
So, for example, setting limits is something that was, you know, oftentimes going to result in some sort of negative behavior. But if it's in service of chosen values, you can commit to those and et cetera, there might be some.
Right. Yep. And that's part of the discussion I'll be having with the motivational interviewing piece, because they're basically motivational interviewing and ACT are very similar in those regards. So mm-hmm. kind of tying the two together is my plan. And it's funny because I had thought about including, you'll notice when we get through all of these, like there's not a specific theme for like OBM or ACT or RFT and some of those kind of broader things. But at least in my experience right now, those are all hot topics. I feel like people are kind of already seeking out information on those things. So I'll be interweaving those different avenues within a lot of the themes, but I didn't make, there's only 12 months in the year and there were too many things that I wanted to incorporate. So I feel like people are already doing pretty good trying to seek out doing better with those kind of bigger areas. But at least right now, those are kind of hot topics that people seem to be studying. So they will be discussed. And I'm hoping, again, people in the community will bring in their own background and experience with things like ACT and RFT,
okay,
and you know, OBM or whatever else they have experience in that I don't. So
got it. That makes sense. So April, the theme for April is intervene early, better.
Yes. So this one is definitely going to be one that's obviously a bit more geared towards the autism route. So people who are working in with other populations may think that it's not as applicable to them, but I'll argue that it is, because the overall concept is we need to understand the population we're working with. So that was a bit too long to put into the theme, but basically the idea being, when we're working with a certain population, obviously bringing in the science of behavior analysis, but also making sure we understand the research relating to that population as a whole. So if you're working in early intervention, you should understand developmental research. And you may, you know, from a behavior analytics side of things, a lot of developmental stuff we may, you know, snub and push aside, but there is really good research out there in developmental psychology and other avenues that we should be focusing on if that's the population we're going to be working with. Just like if you're in OBM, you should be familiar with OBM research and, you know, all of those different types of things. If you're working in a nursing home, you would want to be familiar with research relating to the elderly. So we'll be talking about that a little bit. But more specifically, there will be a focus for early intervention where things that I especially wish I had learned in grad school, because that is one of my primary focus areas. I love the like birth to three population and working with them. But there is so much about that population that we are not trained on and we're actually trained opposite of to do with them. So we'll be touching on some of that information as well. So week one, I'll probably have some videos of my son kind of showing, cause he's at that age, like he's two. So showing some like typical toddler behavior and sort of discussing, you know, that whole idea, because I know when I was in grad school, anytime we said like, well, that's typical for a 2-year-old, it was like, nothing's typical, blah, blah, blah. You know, there was this whole like idea that, you know, it's not really, there isn't a developmental stages and phases and things like that. But that's a really long discussion. So that's part of it. That's what we're going to open up with. And then in week two, I have a webinar that I'll be doing that kind of discusses some of the key areas that I feel like behavior analysts don't do well with for early intervention. So looking at imitation and pre-communicative behaviors. And then this is going way more in specific to autism, but sort of the ADOS and like the diagnostic factors for autism and how we need to make sure that we're assessing those things and taking those things into account. So, and then for the week three, I will have a blog with a bunch of different early intervention resources. Week four, community participation, if there's things that people wish they had known, whether it's for early intervention or just any population that they're working with. And then for week five, because there's technically 5 weeks in April, we'll have a bonus autism awareness webinar where I'll be talking about interdisciplinary collaboration and like the importance of making sure to recognize like other people with expertise in that population. So for this one, it's autism, but in whatever you're doing, you know, whatever population you're working with, you should be working at all the experts in that field, not just behavior analysis. So we'll be talking about that as well.
All right. Very nice. And so May is break out of the EPB box better. So, I'm assuming that's evidence-based procedures.
Yes. So May is, which probably sounds very counterintuitive, break out of the evidence-based procedures or evidence-based practice box better. So the whole idea for this one is that we want to be looking at, there's kind of a spectrum I see relating to evidence-based practice where some people that I've encountered within our field lately don't even have any critical analysis or anything like any link that's posted or resource that's given. They're like, oh, I need to try that with my client. And they don't put any thought or effort into figuring out if there's even research behind it. And then there's the other side of the spectrum where people demand to see a study to support every single little thing you do without even realizing the fact that a lot of the things that we're trained to do in our grad programs, if you tried to find a study on, you wouldn't be able to. So like certain prompting procedures and data collection procedures and things like that. So I want people to kind of break out of that box or that spectrum and look at evidence-based practice more as the problem solving model and the way that it's used in like medicine where, and we kind of talked about this, I think a little bit on one of our other, podcasts.
Yeah.
But
yeah. I think it came up in our first interview.
Yep. So we'll be talking about that. And then, just kind of helping people again, it sort of ties back to January and that whole, like thinking like a behavior analyst and thinking critically and not getting bogged down by this whole like evidence-based practice thing. So week one will be, I'm hoping to have a video. I'm probably going to have to find it on YouTube or something. But there's a few people that have put out some resources relating to the evidence-based practice model. So I wanted to have a video of that. And week two, we'll have a webinar where we'll review kind of what I just talked about, that whole like spectrum idea and making sure you're not too far on one end of the spectrum or the other and that you're using that problem solving model and kind of figuring out if something's evidence-based or if it's not. Week three, I'm going to share a blog where I've made and this one is going to tie a bit back into autism again, but I made a table a couple years ago of like all the different evidence-based practices for autism and I should say evidence-based practice in quotes because it's more empirically supported, but we'll get into that. But basically looking at the research behind a lot of the different treatments that are out there. And then for week four, we'll do community participation where people will talk about how they've used the problem solving as opposed to just looking for a list of, you know, research articles.
All right. So sounds like interesting stuff. Rolling into June, we've got arrange the environment better.
Yeah.
Tell me
about
that.
This one was really, really hard to label. So basically, what I want to talk about for this one is I see a lot of people recommend or post about using behavioral skills training or functional communication training or demand fading. But then when I talk to people about those things, they're not yet necessarily using them the way that the research was done and that the best practices would say how to do them. So like they might say we're doing functional communication training, but when I say, okay, well, what are your procedures? They're not actually doing functional communication training. So for this month, we'll be looking at if you're going to be using these different types of procedures, what are the best practices related to them? And we might talk about habit reversal as well as we may talk about some stuff related to like self-stimulatory behavior in this month too. So kind of how do we arrange the environment when we're addressing these challenging behaviors or trying to do some of these like really well-established procedures in our field, but make sure that we're arranging it in the way that it was intended to be done so that we see effective results. So for this one, for week one, I'll have a video demonstrating like examples and non-examples of some of these things of arranging the environment appropriately versus not. For week two, I'll have a webinar that goes over the best practices and some of the key research relating to some of these environmental arrangements. In week three, there's a blog that I'm going to write where I'll probably be summarizing some of the stuff from Hanley. He has some behavior analysis and practice articles relating to this. And then week four will be community participation where people share, you know, examples of their successes with arranging the environment for supporting these types of procedures.
I have a feeling that's going to be a very popular month. So,
yeah, it was just really hard to come up with a name for it because I was like, there's all of these procedures I see people using. But then when they tell me they're using them, they're not really doing it the way that they're supposed to be. And I don't know what to call that.
I see.
But when I looked at it, I was like, really, what's not happening is the environment's not being arranged the way it should be. So that's what we're going to call it.
All right. So I guess continuing in the same vein, breaking down skills and analyzing data better, another very important topic. And that's the focus topic for the month of July.
So breaking down skills and analyzing data better. I'll give you one guess. Do you know what this may relate to?
Are we going to talk about pinpointing? And standard acceleration charting?
Yes. Well, I don't really put as much of a focus on pinpointing for this one. I think Rick's group is covering that pretty well. So if people want to learn about that, they can go to a Chartlytics training. But what I'm hoping to talk about for this is kind of like precision teaching being one of the missing links for behavior analysts and being the most effective that they can be and doing better. So what I learned about breaking down skills and analyzing data using the methods that are used by precision teachers, that has really improved my practice as a behavior analyst. So that's why I kind of titled it like this. So for this one in week one, we'll be looking at, I'll have some videos of frequency building so that people can kind of see what that even is and why it would be important. And then in week two, I'll have a webinar on how precision teaching made me a better behavior analyst. In week three, I'm going to have a blog where I'm going to sort of talk about some of the great contributions from precision teaching and sort of seminal articles that people should, you know, try to make sure that they read. And then week four, community participation, where people can do some examples. And I really, really excited. Hopefully people will share some examples of some component composite analysis. So that's that breaking skills down and how they've made better progress with their learners by looking at things from the component composite analysis piece, which may not make sense to anyone listening right now. But if you participate in July, you'll learn more about it.
Oh, you know how to keep people in suspense.
I know.
Seven months of suspense.
I mean, you're more than welcome to contact me now if you're dying to know. But and that's actually another thing. So part of the reason I set up the Slack page is to have these, like, the channels are already created for each of these months. So if people want to get a conversation going about any of these themes before the actual month comes, they're more than welcome to. It's just, this is what I'll be focusing on in each of the months myself. And then there are 5 weeks for July. So I think for the fifth week, what we're going to do is a bonus blog or webinar where I'm going to present more information on the Big Six Plus Six, which gets a lot of attention on social media right now, people wanting to learn more about it and how to do it. And basically, it's the idea that there's at least six different motor movements, fine motor movements that, if you get those built to fluency, it makes it a lot easier to teach other skills. So we'll be kind of talking about that and just motor movement fluency in general, probably to help people if they're interested in, you know, kind of going down that line of intervention.
You know, can I and allow me to observe that that kind of ties back into what you were saying earlier, you know, in terms of thinking better and assessing skills better. You know, there are times, I just saw a kiddo the other day, and they're trying to, you know, get him to exchange pictures, and, you know, pointing and reaching and all those things weren't even in his repertoire yet. And, you know, I was just like, hold on. So, you know, it's like a situation. Someone had a PEX manual and they were trying to do their best. I'm not trying to be, you know, negative or anything like that. But those are the resources they had. And they were, you know, following some, you know, very manualized intervention and things like that. And not that it, you know, I'm God's gift of behavior analysis or anything like that, but it was immediately apparent to me that, you know, those responses associated with the exchange weren't going to happen anytime soon, you know, unless, you know, basic pointing, basic, you know, picking up, basic, you know, dropping or whatever you want to call it, were established. So that I think that will tie in nicely to a lot of the other topics yes. that you've already mentioned.
Yes. So and that's where, for me, especially with precision teaching, like, I don't see people or skills the same anymore as I used to, now that I know about component composite analysis. Like, it's just so much easier to look at something and go, well, of course he's not doing X, Y, or Z. It's because you haven't taught A, B, and C. Whereas before, I'd be so focused on whatever it was we were trying to teach, like the PEX protocol or whatever. And I'd be like, oh, well, we may need to modify like this or that with the protocol, as opposed to looking at the learner and like what skills were deficient from a more component composite standpoint. So
I agree. Yeah, I might have, you know, been saying, oh, we just need a stronger reinforcer, you know, or something like that. You know? And yep. you know, there's nothing wrong with finding effective reinforcers, of course, but you know what I'm saying. All right, so August is design instruction better.
Yes. So this is an area that I feel that I'm actually going to do better because I know a good bit about this, but I don't know as much as I want to. And I have books that I've bought and I haven't finished reading. So that's why it's all the way out in August, because
give you a little lead time to, you know, I am the king of doing that, of buying books and reading the first chapter and then, oh, you know what? I see this other book here that I want to check out. And then that happens and things like that. So I definitely hear you on
yes.
that. So,
yeah. So I'm really looking forward to this one. But basically for this one, the whole point is there's a ton of research. Well, I shouldn't say a ton of research, because I honestly, there's a whole, you can get a degree in instructional design, which I didn't even know that until I was getting my doctorate. And I met Eric Fox, who works at Ohio State, and he has Foxy Learning, and yeah, I met him, and that's his degree, is in instructional design. I was like, I didn't even know you could do that. But basically there are people who have written books on this and done research, and it's an area that like Kent Johnson from Morningside is heavily focused on in the work that they do with their learners there. So for this one, we'll be looking at, you know, instructional design. What does that even mean? What are some curriculums that are created based on instructional design? Because a lot of, especially schools, a lot of the books and things that they use for like math or science or whatever, they're flashy and nice, but they don't have any sort of instructional design component behind them.
Yeah. I agree. I spend a lot of time in schools, and if I'm in a classroom doing an observation, and I don't know, you know, again, it's an area that I don't know a ton about, but, you know, it doesn't take too long to notice that, you know, there is not a lot of opportunities for responding for students and things like that. And it just seems many times the curricula are inefficient at the very least. And so definitely any information that helps inform the participants in this movement, I think, will be well received. All right, so we're back talking about navigating challenging behavior better, because that is the theme for September. So what do you have planned for that, and what sort of topics do you plan on covering?
Sure. So for the navigating challenging behavior, the plan is to look at how we can make sure we're not just blindly implementing behavior reduction protocols, and that we're staying on top of the research relating to advancements with assessment. So things like, you know, Hanley and the ISCA, but also in terms of things relating to interventions and that we're individualizing our interventions based on the environment. So, you know, obviously from the topic that we already covered with escape extinction, how I have issues with the way that we use traditional escape extinction, but looking at the environment as well, even for things like planned ignoring and other procedures that we typically use, if the people in the environment aren't going to properly implement what we would see if we were doing some sort of intervention like planned ignoring or escape extinction, then we need to know how to create interventions that will be effective using the science of behavior analysis. So for the month of September, the first week I'll probably have the video will be of the 7 steps most likely. For week 2, we'll be looking at how to create individualized behavior plans, and also looking at making sure we're maintaining human dignity and working within the environment that that the plan will work within the environment that we're working in. And I'll probably try to include some stuff on anxiety in quotes, because I know that's not a behavior analytic term. And that may be where we include some information on addressing stereotypy as well, if I don't talk about it in June. And then for week 3, it'll be another blog, probably talking about some of Hanley's work, because he's like one of the kings of this area right now. And then week 4, we'll do some community participation where people can do some examples with unique behavior plans or, you know, ways that they're individualizing things for their learners. And then in week 5, we'll have the bonus for week 5, but I'll probably base that off of kind of what the community seems to be interested in. I haven't picked what the bonus is going to be yet for that.
I'm sure you'll get lots of suggestions. When you start talking about problem behavior, you know, hands go up. So
yep.
I'm sure you won't lack for ideas once you guys start chatting about that. So, all right, October, we got 1/4 to go, and I know Taylor is holding up like a champ, and you are too. So for the listeners listening along, Megan and I are talking on Skype, and she is walking around her house trying to make sure Taylor gets exactly what he needs. We had planned this during his nap time, and inevitably, he
woke up during the nap.
That's right. It's what happens when you plan these things, right? So, Megan is the epitome of multitasking right now. So, all right.
And you're getting a whole entire tour of my really messy house.
yes, of course. October is schedule reinforcement better.
Yes. So this was another one where I had a hard time coming up with what to call it. But basically, I want to talk about behavioral economics, because I think a lot of people don't really know much about it. And I know you've done a great job featuring it on the podcast, but it's just an area that I don't think a lot of people learn about in grad school and don't realize like how they can use the research from behavioral economics within their practice. So,
I call it
schedule reinforcement better, because that's how I think behavioral economics can inform us well, is like if you understand the research there when you're scheduling reinforcement, you'll understand the different multiple schedules that are happening and how they sort of interact with one another. So,
yeah, I would, that's cool. I wasn't expecting that. So, and just a tip to anyone, go see any talk. If you're going to a conference, you see Derek Reed on the docket. I know we talked about him in the last episode, but he's really, really good at making these really complex concepts very relatable. I'll definitely check that out and check out, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Willie DeLeon's has done some work in that area as well. So those would be a couple of different resources for people to get into. So that's really exciting, because it just brings me back to my grad school days a million years ago, because behavioral economics was like really huge, especially in the EAB community and things like that. So to be talking about it, you know, almost 20 years later in the context of more practical, applying it towards, you know, practical social problems is really, really cool. So,
yeah. Yep. And that hopefully then you'll have a lot to say during that month, to help, because I know very little about it, but what I know is has helped me greatly. So I figure if I know very little and it's helped me greatly, then anybody that can learn at least what I know, but if not more, will benefit just as much. So this is another one where I'm hoping to learn more myself and continue with my process of doing better as well. So,
well, the next month is really applicable to what's going on right now, feeding, sleeping, toileting, et cetera. So,
So this is another one where I feel like I see a lot of people asking for help relating to each of these issues, feeding, sleeping, and toileting, but maybe they haven't received any training because a lot of graduate programs aren't going to train you on feeding and sleeping typically. Some will have done some toileting. But generally speaking, this is an area where I think a lot of times behavior analysts don't seek out the mentorship that they should be. So we'll talk about that a little bit, but then also just some best practices relating to these topics. And this again ties in with the January Think Better, because this is another area where I see a lot of people, especially for toileting, it's like, we've learned this procedure and this is what you do. And there's no critical analysis of like, well, what's actually, you know, the best procedure for this particular child and the deficits that they're showing with the problem that they're having with toileting. So,
and how does that fit into the context of the caregivers? You know, are they willing to implement, you know, so you might need to, you know, be flexible as it relates to that based on what you can reasonably expect people to pull off.
Yes. So for this one in week one, I'll probably have some sort of YouTube video potentially with Taylor, because he has his own feeding issues too. And then week two, I'll have a webinar where I go over best practices relating to each of these topics. And then in week three, I'm going to have a blog where I highlight some of the key research in each of the areas. And like resources relating to each area. And then in week four, hoping for community participation for people to share like their individualized experiences with, you know, addressing these issues.
I see. And so we round out 2018 in December by talking about developing play and reinforcers better.
Yes. So this is another one that I see posted a lot where people are asking how to, you know, broaden the reinforcers that a client is using or like get them motivated, period. And just developing play skills. So especially for, this is another one that's going to tie in a little bit more with autism, but I still think people can contribute from other areas. Just around the idea of like how to develop reinforcers, especially for me, I would love to learn a little bit from like the OBMers about, you know, within the work setting, how do you better identify reinforcers or like build up reinforcers for your staff. But for this, what I have planned that I'll be talking about the first week is I'll probably have a video of Taylor where I show kind of there's a difference I like to make between play and leisure. Because a lot of the times people will say they're teaching play skills to a child, but when you actually look, the child's not enjoying it at all. So that's not really play. So I have this distinction I make between play being like fun and exciting and motivating, and leisure being activities that are, you know, play based, but they're not necessarily like the client's doing it because it's something to pass the time.
I see.
So I'll be having some, I'll have some video of that. And then for week two, I have a webinar that I'll be doing that kind of goes into that discussion a little bit more about like the difference between play and leisure and how you can build up play skills. But then also the webinar will go into assessing motivation and reinforcement and how to condition reinforcers and improve the reinforcing value of things without killing the motivation. And then for week three, I'll have a blog where I highlight resources relating to play and motivation. And then in week four, we'll do community participation. And I'm really hoping, like I said, we'll get lots of active participation for this one with people sharing. I am not a fun person. So any ideas relating to how to be fun, I would absolutely love people to share those.
Come on, though.
You're on that. You're good with that. Okay. And then also, just like I said, other people working in other settings, like this just kind of general idea, because we all play and have reinforcers, just depending on what population you're with, what that looks like is going to be different. So having everyone kind of chime in on the work that they're doing with relation to those topics.
I see. Very cool. Well, I guess my final question is, it sounds like you had everything mapped out real nicely. I'm just curious from a productivity standpoint, and I'm interested in this from, you know, both general knowledge and for my own kind of selfish purposes in terms of so it sounds like a lot of content creation, both in terms of blogs and videos and things along those lines. How do you plan to get it all done? Not to overwhelm you or anything like that, but it sounds like there's a lot, a lot of, again, content creation going on. And so talk to me a little bit about, do you have a schedule set out to do these sorts of things, or, you know, how do you do that and while not pulling out all your hair, I guess, is my general question.
Part of it is I work best when I have like deadlines and things like this. So these are all topics and activities I've been wanting to do and create content on for a while. So kind of getting it down on paper and making it like a public announcement with a community involved will definitely help motivate me to get it all done. But some of it's stuff I already have content created for. Especially January, February, March, I already have most of that stuff already made. And I put the things that I don't have as much sort of later.
Okay.
So kind of planning it out that way where it'll give me time to create the content. But that's the biggest thing is really just that motivation of, oh, well, shoot, now I've put it out there. I have to make sure it happens, because I've had a to-do list for years relating to all of these topics. And it's just other things get put ahead of that because I have other items that are must do instead.
I see.
Sorry.
All righty. Well, I think we have tested Taylor's patience as much as he is going to let us today. So thanks so much for coming on the show again. And I'm glad we were able to kind of soldier through this. In an ideal world, we probably would have done it some other time. But I think both of us wanted to start the year off with this. And this seems like the only time it was going to happen. So I appreciate the inconvenience for your afternoon today. So I will have all this information in terms of the links to Navigation Behavioral Consulting, the Facebook group, and so forth. That will all be at behavioralobservations.com/, and I think this will be probably session 43, if I'm not mistaken. And so you can go there if you want to learn more. And I think that's probably going to be a wrap for today's episode, but I look forward to hearing how this rolls out. And for those of you who, do check these things out on social media, you'll probably see it kind of play out online, or if you join the Slack group and things like that. So various ways to kind of keep informed as to how this plays out. So Megan, thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Matt, and thank you to you and your listeners.
All right, we made it. So no one's going to really confuse this podcast with the production quality of things like Serial and Reply All and other shows like that. But, this is real life, and I hope you enjoyed that information that Megan brought to this session of the podcast. I want to also give shout-outs to, again, Chartlytics, Operant Coffee, and the Georgia Autism Providers Conference for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. And I think that's going to do it for today. So we will see you in session 44. Thanks for checking this out, and I'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Behavioral Observations Podcast with Matt Sikoria. You can find Matt's notes on this episode at www.behavioralobservations.com. We also invite you to stay connected with us on Facebook at facebook.com/behavioralobservations and on Twitter @behaviorpodcast.